Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 343 of the podcast. It's Saturday, 14th of October, 2017, as I record this. And as you listen to this on Monday, I will be flying over to San Francisco. Fun times. So today I'm talking with Jessica Abel, a comic book artist turned prose writer and creative teacher, about finding your focus and moving past procrastination to get your creative work done. Something that I know we all need to hear. So in publishing this week, the big news was Frankfurt Book Fair, but to be honest, I was looking at the stuff coming out of it and yeah, lots of deals and talks about stability and nothing too interesting, which was quite funny. It almost feels separate to what we're doing as indies. Interesting. There were some sessions on AI and the launch of Blockchain for Books initiative from the Alliance of Independent Authors, which wouldn't have gone noticed by most of the fair because it was kind of in a little corner. But also a lot of interesting stuff for authors in the online Indie Author Fringe, which was Saturday the 14th. Today, as I talk, and as you get this, you'll be able to find it all at indieauthorfringe.com or on selfpublishingadvice.org. Lots of sessions on how to run an effective author business, and much more interesting than most of the stuff at Frankfurt. On AI and tech stuff, I'm not going to do too much futurist stuff today, but I had to share. For those of you who geek out like me, I watched a live interview online yesterday with Ray Kurzweil, who's sort of one of the grandfathers of AI and the singularity, and interviewed by Peter Diamandis, author of Bold, and together they run Singularity University, which is a site I get their stuff every day, and I love hearing what they're all up to. But Ray is like a sort of superstar in the futurist community, and I had submitted a question and he answered my question about gender in the singularity. So I was just really, I'm really thrilled at that. And I was kind of at home going, ooh, on my own as he answered it. So very cool. And if you're interested, his answer was that gender will be much more fluid in the singularity, as you'll be able to choose how you portray yourself to the world. So really interesting discussion anyway, geeking out. I also geeked out this week because I went to see Dan Brown speak in Harrogate. Now I had, because I'm a fan, Dan Brown definitely changed my life. Whatever you think about his writing, he does write books that I enjoy around, with fast-paced plot and lots of art, architecture and religion. and kind of the model for my arcane books, although I definitely, mine are a lot shorter because I cut out a lot of the Wikipedia parts that he leaves in. but it was really good to see him speak. He's actually a very good speaker, and I'm sure he's had some coaching because no one is naturally that good. He was excellent, and he was also a completely normal bloke. And it reminded me of how the media really skew people. They've reported on some of his what they consider extreme or weird things, like hanging upside down to think about things. And I mean, he said, I do that very rarely. And they sort of made it out to be a big thing. I also thought Origin was a lot better than some of his last books, mainly because he's writing about topics he loves. And he talked about being brought up in a home where his mum was very religious and his father was a maths professor. So he was sort of in a religion versus science household. And the book Origin is actually very futurist, and sort of features stuff about the singularity, and I was thrilled to find many of the books that I've been reading in his acknowledgements, as well as the art and architecture and culture of Spain. The book has also got some interesting futurist stuff in. So what I learned from listening to him was to double down on what you love. And I think this is so important because we walk through this industry sort of swayed on all sides by opinion, by what other people say, you know, whether we should write this or write that. And at the end of the day, just double down on what you love and write what you're interested in and what you care about, as other people will be interested too. And, you know, I feel very strongly about this in terms of my own, my JF Pen writing time. I do write the things that I'm interested in and, you know, really focus on the stuff that interests me. So culture, and art and architecture and religion, and you know, and you can still write a fun story as well as make a philosophical point. And I think he does that very well in the book. And it was funny because I've been editing Map of Shadows this week, and I came to my author's note at the end where I realized that the book is very much about borders and Brexit and nationalism and all of this type of stuff underlying the story. So you can do these things. I also love that when he was asked a question about research, and he said, yeah, I spend several years researching my book and I travel a lot and I interview interesting people. And oh yeah, I've got one of the new Tesla cars, which I wrote about in the book. And he was basically talking about tax deductible research, which I thought was great because that's how I run my writing life too. What else? Yeah, he also sets boundaries very well. That's the other thing about the media, why they report him in quite negative ways, I think, is because he does very rare interviews and this was his only UK physical appearance en route to Frankfurt, where he was also there. But it was interesting because he basically said, you know, look, I enjoy travel. I enjoy thinking and writing and being with my family and, you know, traveling. And he's not that interested in doing media interviews. Now, of course, he's Dan Brown and he's done really well. But he also pointed out that his first three books didn't make any money. And in fact, he was working a couple of jobs when he was writing the first three. Angels and Demons was before The Da Vinci Code. It was The Da Vinci Code that took off, which was his fourth novel. So it was really interesting to hear him talk about that. But yeah, there we go. Happy to see Dan Brown. And he just made me reflect on what I want as a fiction author, and it is to be similar to him. It's to travel, to write the stories I'm interested in, to still write good stories but have a philosophical point underneath, you know, or a meaning or something that I'm thinking about on a deeper level, and yeah, to stay away from the media and really just to write. And if you don't make loads of money, then so be it. It's really about spending your time doing what you love, and you know, why bother otherwise? So that was cool. What else? Yes, so I finished my line edits for Map of Shadows, and I must say that towards the end I was like, okay, I really am done with this now. So happy to have sent that off to my proofreader, and it is a bit early because I've put it on pre-order for December, but it means I'll be able to get the print formatting and everything done and the pre-order sorted without you know, last minute stresses. And I really like that. I actually think doing pre-orders is a good thing for getting everything organized in advance, you know, having ads scheduled and emails and blog posts. And it's nice to do that. I feel happy with that. Also, The Healthy Writer is, you know, thanks for all your pre-orders of The Healthy Writer and Map of Shadows. I'm really excited about them both. I've also been preparing for San Francisco and the Oregon Coast Business Workshop. I've been also prepping for November, doing lots of interviews in advance, scheduling content, basically so for the next couple of weeks I can concentrate on really just being in San Francisco, being in Oregon, and not having to do lots of extra stuff. So hardcore scheduling, which, you know, just good to get that all done. I'm also thinking about, you know, I'm actually presenting on the Oregon Business Workshops along with Dean Wesley Smith and Christine Catherine Rush and Kevin J. Anderson and some other people, Matt Buckman. And so that's going to be fun. But I'm also reflecting on my own business because this time last year I wrote my business plan for 2017. And so I'm revisiting that for 2018. And one of the things I've done, and part of this was off the back of Dan Brown, and also off the back of talking to Jessica and a number of other people, listening to the Being Boss podcast, which I'm really enjoying. It's about, you know, it's about being boss, about the fact that you are the boss of your own creative business, and talking a lot about unscheduled time. And this is quite hard for someone like me because I do schedule everything, but what I find is I schedule too much and then I get too tired. So I've actually already gone through 2018 and I've scheduled blocks of do not schedule anything time. Which sounds really odd, but it's almost like white space, because I'm actually at my most creative when I have nothing scheduled, when I don't have an interview, when I don't have to do blog posts, when I don't have to go anywhere. So I feel suddenly more in control of 2018, which I'm really happy about. So my aim is to create more and just focus on filling my creative well a lot more as well. It does feel a little empty at the moment, which is why I'm really happy to be off to San Francisco next week. Yes, so if you're feeling a bit overwhelmed, then take control of your schedule. Get in there and block things out. I find Google Calendar is excellent for this, syncs to your phone, and yeah, very cool. All right. And one more thing about America and scheduling and crazy stuff. My friend Jay Thorne, my friend and co-writer Jay Thorne, and Zach Bohannon have actually started authorsonatrain.com. Completely mad. If you remember back in May, I got on a train with Jay and Zach and Lindsay Barocca, and we got the train from Chicago to New Orleans, and we co-wrote American Demon Hunters Sacrifice. So that's cool. And they've started authorsonatrain.com because in case other people would like to get on the train, I will definitely be interested if it ends up being first class on the Orient Express or the GAN across Australia. But for now, it's still the Amtrak from Chicago to New Orleans. So you can check that out, authorsonatrain.com. Okay, so thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments this week. And remember to let me know what you're doing while you listen to the show at The Creative Pen on Twitter. So Terry Connellan, listening to the seven-figure indie author Joseph while driving through the Sydney Royal National Park, sent pictures of lovely flowers, which is nice. DC Harrell says, frost arrived in Minneapolis last night. I'm harvesting the last of the tomatoes, red and green, while listening to the show. Really lovely tomato pictures. And that, you know, those are two really interesting tweets because, you know, harvesting your tomatoes in your home might not sound exciting to you, but to everyone else, that's cool. I love to hear of you harvesting your tomatoes in Minneapolis. That's brilliant. Thanks, DC. Kim Ingleby, the mind body coach, says, did you move your body and relax your mind today? Love to know. Anna McNuff says, share daily mini adventures. So here's mine, and sent a picture walking her dog, which is cool. Anthony St. Clair, listening while getting ready for a long weekend in Boise, Idaho, and then heading to Lincoln City for the Business Masterclass, which is where I'll be. So see you soon, Anthony. Helen, listening en route to BoucherCon Mystery Writers Conference, which is one of those cool conferences I haven't been to yet, but everyone says BoucherCon is really good, so hope you have fun. And Dr. Tracy Stanley, taking a break while writing in the study in Mandalu, La Napoule, I think that's how you would say it. Beautiful view in France. Love France. Awesome place. And finally, Lisa M. Lilly, doing physical therapy and yoga while listening to the show. Looking forward to The Healthy Writer. Me too. And again, it's been so good for me to do The Healthy Writer because I'm refocusing on my health, which is excellent. I'm doing a lot of yoga at the moment and it's really good for my, and in fact, I'm standing up right now on my brand new wooden standing desk thing, which I will be sharing pictures of. My electronic desk, which went up and down, the motor crapped out. I've had it for 2 years and they do replace the motor, but it's a right pain. So I'm now using a kind of stackable wooden system on my desk. What's it called? HumbleWorks. Yeah, HumbleWorks. And it's a sort of, yeah, it's a sort of stackable wooden thing. And it's very good. And it means I'm not annoyed by moving my desk up and down. Okay, so this show is sponsored by Ingram Spark. I use Ingram Spark to print and distribute my own self-published print books because with Ingram Spark, it's my content, but they help me do more with it. The main reason to use Ingram Spark alongside CreateSpace is for extended distribution for your print-on-demand books. You have access to 39,000 retailers, independent bookstores, libraries, schools and universities, chain bookstores and more across a global network of distributors. These people and these bookstores are not going to order from Amazon because they can't get a discount, and they need to have a discount in order to make a living. So you need to be in the catalogues that they access online and offer discounts that make your print books look more attractive, which you can do through Ingram. You can also choose to use returns. I personally don't use returns and have never had an issue with it. After starting to use Ingram Spark in January 2017, I have grown my print revenue streams and had my books featured at literary festivals for the first time. I've also started doing large print editions, which I'll be writing about at some point for my sweet romance. And I definitely want to do some hardbacks as well. So you can do lots of different kind of things with your print when you use Ingram Spark. So if you are a speaker or you have physical distribution option yourself, you can also get books at a much cheaper price and print locally. So very exciting. If you want to do more with your print books, head over to ingramspark.com. Right, so this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. Thanks to new patrons, Yana Floyd and Game Cupid. And I really do appreciate your Patreon support, like the tweets and emails. It really demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And I have just, I am about to record, and as you listen to this, I will have sent out the Patreon-only Q&A show, the extra audio. And if you join the Patreon support, you will get all of the extra monthly Q&A audios, and you can do that for just a couple of dollars a month. So head over to patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen to get all that backlist Q&A audio. Right, let's get on with the interview. Today, I'm here with Jessica Abel. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Jessica is an author, cartoonist, and creative teacher. Her books include the award-winning graphic novel La Perdida, Mastering Comics, as well as Out on the Wire, about the storytelling techniques of the best audio producers in the world, including Ira Glass. Her latest book is Growing Gills, How to Find Creative Focus When You're Drowning in Your Daily Life, which I know many listeners will care a lot about. So, Jessica, why don't you start by telling us a bit more about your creative journey and how you got into illustration, comic books, and became a writer?
Well, it goes way back, as it does for most authors. I started making comics when I was in college, I guess, I was in a club where we made an anthology together. And, I never studied art formally. I was in a literature program, and so learned a lot about the language part of it, but not as much about the art part of it, and kind of had to make that up for myself. This is in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, where pre-internet, there was a really robust self-publishing scene for cartoonists doing kind of alternative adult comics, not superheroes, not any of that other kind of stuff. The kind of stuff I was doing was really quotidian stories about like young people kind of going about their lives, facing the kind of daily problems they have, and you know, that sort of thing. And it's not a mainstream, has never been a mainstream thing to be in comics. Meaning the top selling kind of thing. And so I and other people sort of in my positions were doing what we called mini comics, which doesn't necessarily mean small. It just means that they're they're self-published and, but by hand, you know, like photocopied and stapled and like maybe rubber stamped, and, you know, you do stuff to them. So I did a series of mini comics, which were not very small. They were actually like 8.5 by 11 over a series of sort of the early 90s. And my omnibus title was Art Babe. And it was a collection of short stories on different topics. It wasn't sort of one ongoing story, but each one was hand sewn. Like the bindings were hand sewn, and they had prints on the cover that I would hand print with, like in one case with potatoes or with like rubber stamps. It was very arty kind of stuff, right? And in 1995, I won a grant called the Zarek Grant, which no longer exists, but it was a very important kind of launching pad for a lot of alternative cartoonists throughout the 90s and the 2000s. I was in the second cohort of that group. And that's a self-publishing grant. It's specifically to support self-publishing. And it was founded by Peter Laird, who's one of the two people who created the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which is a self-published book.
Didn't know that.
They're a huge, huge success story of independent publishing and comics, which has a kind of longer and more, you know, we haven't had to battle for respect in the same way that I think people in the print world have. It's a very different feeling. It's like, yay, comics, let's all do it, instead of you aren't real. You know what I mean? There'd been a bit of that, but because we were coming in with like an entirely new way of making comics and new way of thinking about stories, there was no place for us in the mainstream comics world. And so what else are you going to do, right?
Mm.
So Peter Laird started the Zarek Grant in order to support specifically self-publishing. So it's not a grant that supported creation. It's a support that actually paid your printer bills, paid for distribution, paid for marketing. You would put in a business plan essentially for your book as part of your grant application. And I won that grant in 95. And so I put out my first professionally printed self-published issue in 96. So that was Art Babe Volume 1, Number 5. And when I had that in hand, that's what got me access to a publisher called Fantagraphics, which is small, still exists, great publisher, one of the top sort of art publishers of comics. And they published all my heroes, all the people I looked up to, and they offered me a book. So I started publishing with them individual issues. Those individual issues then led to a book deal with Pantheon for my, not for Art Babe stuff, but for a second book, which is a graphic novel, meaning a complete story, not a bunch of short stories, called La Perdida. And that came out, the complete version of that came out in 2006. And then I've done a bunch of other comics with other publishers. So I've worked with actually a bunch of different publishers. I was also series editor for the Best American Comics for 6 years with my husband, Matt Madden. And so we were the people who collected all the material and gathered it for the guest editor each year. And I've just been involved with sort of traditional publishing really deeply for, you know, over 10 years now. And but I was getting really burned out on it. I was feeling really like my last book, Out on the Wire, I had great support for it. Love my editor. She was amazing. And she made the book what it was. And like having that editorial feedback is rare in comics because of the work process, because often what shows up on the editor's desk is like much closer to a finished product than the manuscript is. And so we worked out a system by which she could actually get in earlier and make it better. And so that I did that, but she left before the book came out, which has happened on every single book I've done, you know, where like the editor who bought the book changes jobs before the book comes out, which is just like, it's just this moment of like, oh my God, really again, I can't believe it. And, you know, if it's something wrong with me, is it me? I don't know.
It happens a lot, actually. That seems to happen to so many authors. Yeah.
All the time. Yeah. Because people change jobs all the time in the industry, and it's not, you know, it's not our fault, but it's just, it happens. And that means that the person who loves your book and who bought your book because they love it and because they want to stand behind it and they want to really, you know, be the hero for it, they move, and then you're just in somebody else's pile. And that happens, you know, and my new editor was great. She was fine, but she didn't have that whole history with me. And then I had, you know, really good PR and marketing support. And still, I felt like it didn't make the impact it needed to make. You know, it's growing slowly. I mean, it's a book with a lot of sort of legacy, a lot of things that it can do in the future. But it still is something I can't I can't affect what happens. I can't go into Amazon and change my categories. Mm. Like, I can't do anything with it. I can't give it away. I can't, you know, there's like so many things that I want to be able to do with this book. And I just feel like it's not fully mine. And that's just got too frustrating for me. So when I decided to write Growing Gills, and Growing Gills is my first, so I've written two textbooks about making comics. And those are books that are in text with lots of illustrations, but they're not just prose books. It's not the same thing exactly. So Growing Gills is my first prose book, actually just prose. And when I decided to do that, and I knew that the self-publishing process would be more direct, like I wouldn't have to deal with the image issue. I would put some images in it, but it's not like a reliant on that. This is my chance. I'm going to try independent. I'm going to try it, you know, use the Amazon platform and, you know, use their print on demand capability for print and just try it. And so I did that in, put it out in May. And I have no idea how I'm doing because I have no like benchmarks at all. But anyway, that's what happened.
Yeah. Well, and it's such a great story because it sounds like, you know, you started out in the independent space and you were empowered and doing stuff. And then the sort of traditional publishing gave you a different platform, but that kind of slowly disempowered you because you had no control. And now you're back to being in control again, but it's still quite sort of all over the place, which is, it's a great journey and really interesting. So I have a few questions kind of coming out of that, sort of circling before we come back into the publishing and what's actually in the book. I wanted to ask just about the comic kind of world, because obviously you mentioned there the physical product of hand sewing and doing potato printing and like physical copies. And now you're doing, you know, there's Kindle comics, Amazon bought Cosmicology, a lot of people reading on tablets. You know, so the comic book world itself is less physical. And now you've got this book, which I presume is selling more in digital form. So how do you feel as an artist with this sort of change? And how does it feel to have a print on demand, not a beautiful kind of hand-sewn book?
It's complicated. There's some very good things about it and some negatives. You know, I love having artisanal objects. You know, I love having hardcovers that are, you know, beautifully produced and all that other stuff. I have full confidence I will have that again. I don't feel like that's out of my... You know, but I also hate having, I mean, this is all my artwork stored over here behind me. If you're watching on video, you can see these boxes. I mean, that's just the art. That's not the books. Like storing boxes of books and shipping them out is no one's idea of fun. Mm-hmm. So I am perfectly happy to, you know, have the POD option, you know, via Amazon. But the thing for me is with a prose book, obviously design is very important. You know, being able to read something, you know, well and have it flow. And, you know, I worked with a great designer who helped me put a lot of features for the ebook together that are very, make it really comfortable to read. So that's all important. But you can flow it on any device. You can make the text larger. You can do all the things that make it accessible for more people when you're using prose. When you're doing comics, you can do e-comics, and I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with that. But one of the key factors of a print comic, one of the key sort of features of it, rather, I want to say, is the fact of the spread. So when you open a book and you have one page on one side, one page on the other side, when you're reading something visual like comics, you are absorbing the entire page at a time, even though you're reading in detail moment by moment. You know, you're reading in a certain order, but you can see what's going to happen in the future. It's like time traveling, you know? And a prose book, you can't, that's not a factor. It doesn't matter, right? Maybe you could see the, you know, chapter title that's afterwards or something. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you don't get that look at a glance thing. You can't use color, for example, over a page spread to show a change of mood that gives you a kind of sense of where you are in the story. You can't like flip through a prose book like you can a comic and just like find a spot by what it looks like, you know? So there are all kinds of things about physical books and comics that make e-publishing more complicated and less attractive. Read a comic that is designed in any kind of interesting way with different panel sizes and shapes. Comixology does a good job of this, but what they do is essentially they have a kind of guided reading path where they zip you around up through the panels. And basically they have cartoonists, some of them former students of mine, who work there and decide what the reading path is for you, right? But if you're a reader, you get to decide on your own. You get to figure that out on your own, and you can kind of look at it all at once. So there are a lot of compromises that go into it. And I feel like the compromises that go in with the prose book are actually, they're way more on the pro side than on the con side, because I've had people complain about like type size on my book, for example, on various books of mine, that they're too small to read. And that's not a problem if you have an ebook. You know, you can just make it bigger. You can have it on your phone and it's in your pocket at all times. So if you're, you know, stuck someplace, you have something to read and you can get into it. Those are things that I just really, I'm really excited about. And they just haven't, they literally haven't been available to me as a cartoonist. So there's two things going on at the same time.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And, you know, I agree with you. And it's so interesting. And I know a lot of writers who've had small print in their print books because of publishing cost. The publishers made the print size smaller and then it's been really hard to read. So I really get that that kind of issue. But just on the writing side, when you were writing Growing Gills, did you, you know, what lessons did you bring from your comic days, and or was it more you were bringing lessons from your teaching work?
I would say it's more the latter. I mean, I think that as a cartoonist, I've had to carefully construct long works and think about the story arc over long periods of time. Or in nonfiction works like Out on the Wire, the sort of essayistic argument that you're making. So I have practice with that. But the visual piece of it is not necessarily something that carries over in this case. You know, the fact that it's comics, the fact that I'm a writer and I've written long books and I've had to do that over and over again definitely helps.
Yeah, definitely.
But the content does come from, it comes from more from teaching and working with students and writing, you know, writing my blog, you know, working on my course, like those kinds of things.
So why this book then? Why Growing Gills and why now? Did you see problems amongst your students or other creatives that led to this? And what are those problems?
Well, it's funny. It actually came out of Out on the Wire in a weird sideways way. So I was, when Out on the Wire came out, I did a podcast version of that book that is a limited series. And it's highly pedagogical in that the end of each episode, there's a challenge to storytellers to do, to create something, to create like a step of the story. And you basically, through the season, you create a piece, you make a story. And then intervening episodes were live episodes where we would actually, so we had an online group where people would post stuff, like the answers to their challenges. We would take some of those, and my husband, Matt Madden, and my producer, Benjamin Frisch, and I would get together and live critique and discuss the work that had happened in the group. So it was this very interactive kind of thing. So this group was there, and I was thinking about, you know, what's my next step professionally? What am I going to do next? I'm not ready to plunge into another 3-4 year long project. I'm still working on a book that isn't done yet. Now I still am working on a book, but then I definitely was still working on a book that isn't done yet. What am I going to do? You know, how am I going to make my life work for the next period of time? And so I was thinking about offering, you know, training and teaching on storytelling online. But when I actually surveyed the people in that group and the people who are on my mailing list about like, what are their biggest problems? Like what's going on with them? The number one thing that came back was, I can't work at all. I'm procrastinating all the time. I'm miserable. Nothing is working. I don't know how to do this. I need help. And I read that, and it took actually a couple reads for me to like click that that's what people were saying. You know, that's really the main thing that was going on. And of course, being able to make the work is a precursor to being able to make the work better, right?
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? I can help with that. Like, I know a lot about getting huge 10-year long projects, you know, bringing them to fruition, getting them out in the world. Like, I know about that. I can help. And so that's when I started writing. This was in, I want to say late 2015. Yeah, it was like late 2015. I started writing about creative productivity. And, you know, basically the crux of it is how to get big deadline-free creative projects done and out into the world. So yeah. I started writing at that point.
Yeah. And you mentioned deadline free there. And that's so important, especially for independent authors, because no one's under contract. And there's almost two extremes. There's the people who are sort of banging them out really fast and burning out. And then there's the people who take 10 years and are still procrastinating. So how do you personally, because I just, for people on video, your art behind you is very organized. Like, my dad's an artist and his stuff is it's definitely a lot more crazy. So how have you organized? Like you said, you've got these tips, and obviously there's a lot in the book, but how do you do your big projects?
I do them the way I teach, which is to try, you know, you have to kind of, you have to shift back and forth in what I call altitudes. This idea of looking at the entire project and deciding kind of where you are in the project and what needs to happen next, in large scale. And then you kind of zoom down to small scale and you're like, what is my next step? What is the next thing I can do? I don't need to think about the whole thing. If I think about the whole thing, I'm going to get distracted, or, you know, get imposter syndrome or whatever it is. And I'm just going to focus on what's right in front of me. That's the simplest possible version of it. I mean, I think that the biggest thing for the two pieces I think I contribute to this whole dialogue about productivity and time management and stuff is this idea of projects that are self-generated and deadline free, that nobody cares that they exist until they exist, right? That you have to bear all of that weight of self-belief in yourself, right? So that's one side of it. And the other side of it is acknowledging the complications of actual life, you know, so that, you know, I have two children and I have a job and I have a whole bunch of other stuff going on. And I not only have to do what I just described about sort of deciding next steps, blah, 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 I also have to block it into my actual calendar in my real week and get those time slots in. And if I don't, nothing happens.
Yeah, I say that all the time. That's like my number one tip, is block the time in your calendar like you would a dentist appointment or a birthday party or like anything that you would put in your calendar. You have to put your work in your calendar, your creative work. So that's really cool. So, right. I have so many questions. I love that. I love that altitude thing. I think that's really good. The sort of, you have to on one hand be really high up and look at the big picture and then zoom down into which bit you're in, which is cool. So, if people are sort of feeling overwhelmed, you know, and like they're feeling drowned, as you've put it, what are the steps for them to work out how to diarize? Like, maybe people are like, well, I can't put time in my diary. I don't even have any time, you know, or I don't even have a diary. So how do people, you know, work out how to get rid of some of the stuff in their way?
Well, I have a bunch of free training about that on my site. And people are welcome to go there. But the short version of it is, there are a lot of different kinds of things that can be in your way. There can be mindset things in your way. There can be literal things. But if we're just talking about the calendar, what's on the calendar? Step one is time tracking. Figure out what you actually are doing. Because most people have no idea. They have no clue what they're actually doing. You know? So you plan out what you think you're going to do for a week or even a day. If it's a week's too much, just do a day. You know, then do it the night before. What do you think is going to happen tomorrow? Literally every single thing. When are you commuting? When are you showering? When are you eating? When are you going to watch a TV show? When are you going to bed? When are you waking up? All those things. When are you working? And then what are those sort of those fungible bits? And if it's only for some people who have like three jobs and two kids and whatever, it's going to be 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And for some people who are retired, it could be 12 hours. And, you know, what are you literally doing in your day? And until you know that, you cannot make other decisions.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Yeah. And what about giving stuff up? Because I find that, you know, most people have to give up something to find that time.
You don't know what that decision is until you know what you're doing. You know, like if you, yes, you probably need to give something up, but the thing you're giving up may be noodling on Facebook. You know, it may be something that doesn't actually matter to you. Like you want to spend 15 minutes a day checking in with people, but you don't need to spend 90 minutes just like doing whatever and scrolling your feed. Mm. Like, what are you doing? And then I talk about this concept of dilemma. Dilemma is, you know, we use it as writers all the time, right? The idea of setting up dilemmas for characters is really powerful, where there's a choice to be made, and there are positives and negatives on both sides of that choice. So some sacrifice is going to be made no matter which choice is the character chooses. Mm. So that's really sexy and awesome when you're writing a fiction book. Not all that sexy and awesome when you're talking about your own life, right? It's really scary and hard. But until you identify what those dilemmas specifically are for you, like what are you having to choose, you have no way to make that decision. It's not possible. Mm. Like you, what you do is you fall into your default, and the default is you're doing one of the two things, or maybe a third thing that isn't even one of the two things, and you don't really know why, and you don't have any control over it.
Yeah. And there was a quote, I can't remember who it's by, you know, how we spend our days is how we spend our lives.
Yeah.
You know, and we think, oh, it's just a day, or it's just an hour, it's just 10 minutes on Facebook, whatever. And, you know, again, it disappears. I just removed Facebook from my phone, and I feel liberated because it's just, I go to find it and it's not there. I'm like, it's not there. Great. I could read a book.
Yeah. And I think the thing is also that we shouldn't, you know, one of the things that writers tend to do is they get punitive with themselves about, you know, spending time in ways that are not writing. Right. So this is the classic thing. I used to do this all the time, and I can't say I don't do it now. I mean, I mostly don't, but it happens, where when I'm working, I'm thinking about all the things I want to do that are not working when I'm actually doing my creative work. Or if I'm procrastinating, sitting in front of creative work, I'm thinking about, like, you know, I'm saying, oh, I'm not going to do all those things. And when I am doing those things, I'm feeling guilty about not doing the work. Right. So you're never guilt and anxiety free in that situation. And that's like classic. Everybody does it. So if you, listener, if you are going through this, it's normal. Everybody does it. That's why I say when you're time tracking, when you're setting up your system, you schedule your essentials first. So food, you know, hygiene, job, sleep, like put those things in there, taking care of your children, like those things that have to happen, put them in first. But the second thing you put in is recreation and leisure before your creative work. Mm. Because if you put in a slot, which is like, I'm going to spend 30 minutes on Facebook, and you put that in your calendar, it might feel kind of like, ooh, that's dangerous. I shouldn't, you know, but like, then you can tell yourself when you're doing your creative work for 45 minutes before that or earlier in the day, like, I'm going to get to go there. Like, it's in the schedule. I have to, it's on my calendar. You know, if you have a problem with like Netflix binging, don't go cold turkey on Netflix. That's not going to work. Cold turkey never works for anything. So, you know, pick a thing that's going to be a reward for you, a time that you've set aside. You say, this is my time to do this, and this is my time when I'm not going to do this. And now I have both, and I can see that I'm going to get both. So I'm not just this kind of like, I have to, you know, scratchy anxiety.
Yeah. Well, and then there's another problem, which is too many ideas. So some authors struggle with not enough ideas, and other authors, you know, I think once you get used to listening to your idea thing, you're full of ideas. So how do you decide? And one big problem is finishing. Like, a lot of people have finishing issues. They start all these projects when it's fun and then they never finish. So that's another form of procrastination. So how do you recommend sort of choosing which one to finish?
Well, I have a kind of in Growing Gills and on my site as well, there's sort of a framework that I've set up for like some principles on which to choose. So one of the principles, the first one basically, is quick wins. So if you have something that's like 99% done, your dilemma is probably something having to do with imposter syndrome and perfectionism, and you just need to, you know, grit your teeth and finish it. Like, do that thing, focus on just that thing and get it done. Whether you publish it or not is another issue. You know, that's another project. It's not the same project, but like, finish the thing. And so if you have a list full of, you know, I talk about this idea, the concept of idea debt, which is, there are two aspects to it. And they both have to do with just, you're just lying in bed thinking about all the ideas, and they're just kind of like flipping through your head. Right. And, So you have to choose something to work on. And if you keep all of those things in your head at the same time, what you're doing is devoting tiny bits of energy to all of them instead of all of the energy you have available to one. And especially if you live a very full life like we're talking about, you don't have that much energy in a week to devote to this. Never mind time. You know, you don't have as very much, you know, life force you can put into this project. And if you're trying to divide it up among 10 things, nothing will ever get finished. You have to pick. So number one is you have to decide, yes, I have to pick. And it doesn't mean you have to throw everything else away. It just means you have to put it away and say, I am definitely not working on that until this thing is done. So quick wins is one way. You know, another one I have there in that list is follow the money. So follow the money is like, is this going to lead to money? Like if you're self-publishing and you have a new, you know, book that you can put out, and even if it's not going to be a gangbuster right away, you can, it can be part of what's building your future, you know? And so you'll make a little bit of money with it, and maybe it'll build up over time, even if it's not going to be a huge thing. I mean, do it, publish it. Like what are you waiting for? Like get it out there, do a thing, you know? And so another one of the things that relates to that is platform building or audience building. So again, if you're an independent publisher, putting out work is, and having like a body of work is crucial to building your platform. Mm. You know, if you have a number of books up on online platforms, people think, oh, this is an author, not just this is a one-off fluke, right? So that's something. So if you have more, another, if you, it's a, where you can add a book to a series, or you can add a book to your portfolio overall, or whatever it is, that's a way to go. Then there's this, the final one, which is the really hard one. I might've missed one, but anyway, there's the one, the big one is future building, essentially. Like, is this the project that will, that really represents the person that you want to be, you know, the way that you want to be in the world in the future. You know, if you think 5 years out and you think of what you want your life to look like, is this a thing where you're going to go like, hooray, thank God I did that 5 years ago? Or is it going to be like, wait, the what? Did I do that? I completely forgot. You know, like those are different kinds of projects. Main thing is, if you can't decide, literally flip a coin, like spin around and point at something. It doesn't matter. In the end, it doesn't matter. All you need to do is finish something.
Yeah. And as soon as you finish something, you know, it will help you get on to the next thing, I find. Like, I just put up a pre-order for dark fantasy novel Map of Shadows, because I know now when it's going to edit, I know when it will go publish. And now I'm thinking about the next book. I'm like, oh, I just want to get into the next one, you know, so that finishing makes you want to start. So we're almost out of time, but I wanted to circle back to the publishing aspect. So what, you know, you're now... you know, you've chosen to go independent with this book. I guess you didn't really cover, well, did you, are you doing indie just because you were ready to go back? And what have you noticed about the changes in independent publishing since the early comic days?
Well, obviously the independent publishing I did before is nothing like what this is like. It's just like the apples and oranges, completely different thing. I'm glad I did do that. So I have some sense of like, I guess what the moving parts are, that, you know, there's a printer somewhere, there's a distributor, that there's, you know, different roles to play. So that doesn't surprise me. So that's good. Coming back into it, I came back into it basically because I wanted to sort of see the life cycle of the book, essentially. And I wanted to be able to launch it to my own list and my own people and serve those people. I didn't feel like I needed to make a lot of money from this book. That wasn't really the aim. The aim was much more building my audience and kind of going wide with it. Although money's nice, but that's not where I'm at right now with this particular work. And you know, I wanted to have the flexibility to set up promotions and give it away with things, and to, you know, it's really a part of, it's a piece of an overall body of work that I'm creating. That includes the Creative Focus Workshop, which is the course that it's adapted from and drawn on, and, you know, really inspired by, and the blogging work that I've done, and a bunch of other, you know, the other pieces. And I kind of took all those pieces and put them, you know, reformed them into this book. And so, you know, I wanted to have that kind of complete piece there. I needed to have the book in order to have something that people could kind of get into my world in an easy, I won't say quick way because it's long, easy way, inexpensive way, and see what I'm all about. Like, what am I doing? I still intend to make an audiobook, you know, with my background in podcasting and stuff. It's like, it's a no-brainer. I just haven't had the time to do it. So again, like, then I see the opportunity to relaunch it, you know, with an audiobook. And I'm interested from a business point of view in all of those things. I don't know if I'm doing a good job or not as a publisher, frankly. Like, I don't have any benchmarks to know. Like, it seems fine. I'm not probably, you know, I gave away a lot for free. And I had like a 5-day free period at the beginning at the launch, and I gave away a ton of books. And so it's in many, many people's hands, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's my goal, then so far so good. And I can continue to do that. It's gotten really amazing reviews. You know, it's been really good in that sense. So I don't know, you know, jury's out, I guess.
Well, it's interesting because you do so many things in terms of courses and podcasts and teaching and, you know, and all of that. And so you mentioned briefly there that you wrote it from the course, and you've got a free course launching, haven't you?
Yeah, actually, I think the free course, there's an evergreen version that's available all the time, and people can get that whenever they want from my site by downloading the What's Stopping You handout. They'll get invitations to that course. But the free version that's live will be over by the time we air. But the course, the full course, the Creative Focus Workshop, the sort of from the air date of this podcast, that's when the doors are open for registration. And I only open it twice a year. So it's a kind of special opportunity. And so what that is a 4-week long live cohort. So there's recorded material and reading to do. And then there's a live group support and calls and all these kinds of things. Because what I find is that while people get a lot out of Growing Gills, and some people are able to just kind of take that and run with it, you know, because mm-hmm. the material's in there, you know, you can get it in Growing Gills. Some people can take that and just like make it work. For most people, the power comes from the cohort. The power comes from other people going through the exact same things you're going through, getting feedback and sort of an ability to customize and individualize what it is that you're doing, you know, specifically, like, am I heading the right way? Is this the right choice for my one goal? You know, is this, you know, how do I break this down? I don't understand what the next step is. And you can get all that from that cohort and from me in a way that you can't, like, just from the book. And so it's a pretty special thing. And I've thought a lot about trying to go evergreen with the course and have it be something I could have available all the time. But that's just the magic. Like, the magic is in that group. So if you're interested in this, if you're struggling with, you know, getting your books finished and getting them out into the world, now is definitely.
Fantastic. So what is your website, and where can people find you and everything you do online?
Well, the Creative Focus Workshop is at thecreativefocusworkshop.com, and I am at jessicaabel.com, and that's JessicaAbel.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, Jessica. That was great.
Thank you.
So I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Jessica today, and that you got some ideas for sorting out your own creative focus as we head into the final months of the year. Next week, I'll be talking to Ryan Holiday about how to make your book a perennial seller, and I'll be giving you an update from San Francisco. So happy writing week, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes, available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.